I found this picture yesterday. I was making the presentation. I thought, I got to have that picture. So I tweeted at the photographer and I said, can I borrow your picture? And he said, I told him what it was for. And he said, sure, go ahead. Which is very nice of him. The original meaning from Julia Ward Howe of Mother's Day is a day for mothers to rise up and say, not in our name. We are not okay with this. With war and carnage and blood, we mothers shall be too tender to other mothers to allow this. That's the spirit I want for us today, a fierce love for your own children and for other children. So we're about celebrating Mother's Day, about celebrating the power and the strength of love that makes a mother not just a mother, but a mother of the movement. And celebrating mothers and all of us who might be social justice educators and exemplars. As the people who do the work, who love the world, who fight injustice, who grieve the losses and refuse to give up in the face of pain. It was my own mother who taught me from a very young age to care about injustice and peace and the earth. We listened to NPR and we watched the PBS NewsHour. And she took me to church and made sure that I was an anti-racist, pro-equality, feminist, peace-loving young man. She tried to make me a hippie, and she mostly worked. And that was as much on her as anyone else. And for this, I am glad. And I know that so many of you have been raised by mothers who taught you the same. Some of them are in this room. Who showed you the ways of fierce love and hope. And I know that some of you who are mothers in particular or parents in general, as well as aunts and uncles and cousins and mentors and teachers and neighbors, have done everything you can to raise up in the young people in your lives a spirit of caring and justice and decency. For all our work to change systems of oppression and write our legislators and vote and march and serve the hungry, and this and that and so much, and that is all good, important stuff. The example that we set for our children and for other children is the most important justice legacy that we leave in the world. And so many of you are about that. But some are not. That's the truth too, right? Not every parent is nurturing. And not every parent teaches their children the power of justice and love, though some teach unintentionally in the wrong direction. I don't want to gloss over this reality, for it is also real. Some mothers, some parents, some adults do not teach justice. They inscribe pain. That's real. And know that if today's hard for you, because you did not get the kind of love and mercy that all children deserve, you're in my prayers this day, and we offer our blessing for you. But here's another truth. There's an in-between. Sometimes mothers and parents and adults that are good about some aspects of justice are not so good about others. And sometimes we also notice, as we get older, the gap between the values our parents might espouse and try to teach us and the actual practice of their lives. You teach your children to care about the environment, but then you are called out by your own kid when you forget to recycle something, or you leave a light on, or they realize, God forbid, that your car uses gasoline. This has happened to me. Dad, I can't believe, yeah. Likewise, but more painfully, we're sometimes exposed to the gap between our words about justice and our actions. We teach our children to treat all people equally, but they see us flinch when someone who looks different gets near. We say we should all live in peace, but we live in a neighborhood built by white flight. We say everyone matters, but it feels like some folks get more deference than others. And so we wonder what's going on. The children might feel shame that their parents don't seem to live up to their words. The parents might feel guilty that they don't, They know they don't, and they don't quite know how or what to do. Something similar is at play in Unitarian Universalism. This faith teaches us these values of inclusion and justice and mercy. We speak the words of feminism and anti-racism and anti-classism, but then our actions don't quite live up to it all the time. And some feel anger or shame that they've been betrayed. And some feel guilt or defensive. I'm doing my best. Why are you so hard on us? Any of that sound familiar to some of you? I won't get into the weeds of the details about how this happened most recently in our particular national association, but it did. And so we were asked by a grassroots group of Black Unitarian Universalists, all the congregations were asked, can we have a deeper conversation about white supremacy? Because that's why, see, the system of white supremacy, like the system of patriarchy or the system of ecological domination, is embedded into the culture. And we are not as separate from the culture as sometimes we like to think. So when we say we're going to be up here, but then we wind up down here, the reason for that gap is the system of white supremacy, which infects our culture at large and our congregations too, and which infects even our own hearts. And this is important. It isn't a personal failing. It isn't, not really, a little bit, but mostly. It's not that. It's not that some people are good and some people are bad, as if we could categorize them. It's that we are all caught in this system, and we have to struggle against it. Even if we're ahead of the curve, we're still caught in the system. We have to name it and grapple with it and approach it and try to dismantle it. So we've been called forth to do this white supremacy teaching and teach about this system so that we can name it and learn how to dismantle it. Because as James Baldwin said, not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced. 700 of our 1,100 congregations are doing it, which is pretty amazing. I don't know that 700 of our 1,100 congregations have ever done anything at the same time. Herding cats is the phrase for Unitarian Universalists. So today I'm thinking about our ancestors. And I'm thinking about the mothers of justice, sisters of mercy and brothers of love, seekers of truth and keepers of faith. Sometimes we approach the work of racial justice, well, just like we approach the work of feminism or any kind of justice work, without a sense of history, without a sense of gratitude for those who have done the facing, who've done the work and sacrificed and taught their children well, who have stood in the breach and with no extraordinary power chosen to reconstitute the world. So I want to lift up some mothers of the movement from the past and from the present. Mentors and teachers, quiet ones and loud ones, ones who held out a hand and said, come on up, come on up. This train is bound for freedom. Of course, this is men and women and trans folks all together, but I want to focus this morning first on women of color, whose example in the past and whose leadership today can be our guide through this work. They're the folks I follow, who can show us what it means to have fierce love for justice, fierce love for equality, fierce love for our children. So I'm talking about folks like Faya Ora Rose Touré, and that's her there. She used to be known as Rose Sanders. She was the first woman of African descent to become a judge in Alabama. Can you imagine how hard that would have been? She was the founder also of the National Voting Rights Museum in Selma, born one of six children in 1945. She also founded a group called Mothers of Many, MOM, where low-income women band together to start businesses in Alabama. And she won the largest civil rights case in Alabama history, a $1 billion payout to Black farmers who'd been discriminated against by the US government over generations. And she wrote music. There's a river flowing in my soul, and it's telling me that I'm somebody. That's her song, she wrote that. a lawyer and a songwriter at the same time, which is pretty impressive. The message of white supremacy is that only some people are really somebody. Fea Ora Rose Touré says, "Oh no, I'm somebody too. Somebody is calling my name, and my name is real." I mean, women like Wesley Mack and Lena Gardner, that's them, two Unitarian Universalist lay women of color who said, "I belong to this faith too. This is my religious home," and they're not giving up and not backing down. They helped found the Black Lives of UU Organizing Collective to say, "We're done waiting and being patient. We don't want you to include us. We want to be equals at the table. We are equals at the table. It's about you recognizing that, not the other way around." And they said, and about this, they could not be more right, "Our faith is stronger. Our theology becomes real when it is not bound by one cultural mode, when we take our ideals and we make them real." Wesley Mack and Lena Gardner are following the pathway of women like Frances Ellen Watkins Harper, that's her, the poet and activist for civil rights and women's rights and writer and mother of four and Unitarian. Later, we're gonna sing a spiritual, "Oh, I Woke Up This Morning." And the tune for this song is named in her honor. It's called Watkins Harper. Frances Ellen Watkins Harper is an amazing woman. Her story is phenomenal and her poetry is great. And frankly, instead of celebrating women like Susan B. Anthony, also a Unitarian, who sold out Black women and men to get white women the right to vote, we should celebrate Frances Ellen Watkins Harper, who refused to compromise or pit one group against the other. And I mean women like Yusei Barnwell, one of the members of Sweet Honey in the Rock, who found herself worshiping one day at All Souls Unitarian Church in Washington, D.C. And she said, "This is my faith. This is me. This is my home. This is what I believe." She's taught us to sing in whole new ways and reminded us that we are our grandfather's dreamings and our grandmother's prayers. She wrote that song. She put our theology into verse, "For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, each and every, without exception." That's our theology. But as Takeya Nur Amin and Adam Dyer and Lena Gardner and Wesley Mack and others have said clearly, we don't always live it. Sometimes our culture gets in the way of our theology. This isn't new. While some Unitarians like Augustus Conant, the minister of this church in the 1850s, railed against the evils of slavery from this pulpit, other Unitarian churches, especially the ones in New England, would not sound their bells for abolition. They were too stuffed with cotton, which is to say the major donors of those churches owned the shipping lines that made their money off the cotton trade. And how will we balance the budget without their gift? In the 1950s and 60s, we marched in Selma and joined protests at lunch counters. A Unitarian Universalist minister, James Reeb, and a Unitarian Universalist waywoman, Viola Liuzu, a mother of five young children in Detroit, an activist for civil rights there, they both gave their lives, murdered by white supremacists in the South. We helped lead that fight. But a few short years later, when Black Unitarian Universalists asked not for help, but for power, we shied away as a faith. It's 1969. That was a bridge too far. And there's a way in which we're back again at that same moment. You know, the work you don't finish, you come back to a generation later until you get it right, a little karma and a chance to get it right. So we're determined to do better this time. At least I am, and most of the ministers that I know are, and the leaders of this congregation are. So if you are a person of color, or to use a phrase folks are starting to use, part of the global majority, I like that phrase, recenters what's been at the center. This is your faith. And know that I and the leaders of this church are 100% committed to a vision of a multicultural church where power and culture and authority are honestly shared among all. And if you're a white person, know that your work towards this vision, in this faith and in your family and in the wider world that we share together, matters so much. This is not you be on the sidelines. This is you not be in the center, but be part of the work. Because it is not just, and we cannot leave it just to women of color to be the mothers of courage and the grandmothers of justice. That is not fair and not what the calling is for. And I know so many of you and others who have helped raise up a world of more beauty and more inclusion and more fairness, mothers and fathers and all kinds of people. And I know those of you who have fought for fair housing, who work today for schools where every student is honored, who teach in those schools, who teach and love kids of every language and race and creed. And I know those of you right now, men and women and trans folks, who are giving everything you've got to stop our county from collaborating with ICE because of the way that organization treats people of color, the way it rips brown and black parents from their brown and black children. And we shall not have it, not in our town. So call your county board member. You doing this work, you have your mind stayed on freedom, not just for yourself, but for each and every child, for each and every person. It isn't always about the revolutionary act. Indeed, that usually flames out. It's about everyday deeds, day in and day out. Choosing inclusion, choosing to decenter yourself and let someone else lead, choosing curiosity instead of assumptions, choosing to believe the stories of those who know how this system works best because they are closest to it. In a way, it's just like being a good parent, a good mother, or as the phrase goes, a good enough mother. It isn't about one grand gesture. That fails, and we all know it. It's about the never-ending work of each and every day. Packing lunches and supervising homework, changing diapers and rocking the baby to sleep, watching them drive off to their first job, giving birth to their first child, claim their own values, and we pray pass along to another generation in turn our longings for freedom, for mercy, for love. It's about the messy, dedicated, constant work. That's parenting. And that's the work of being a mother of the movement, too, about fierce love put into everyday practice. The work is hard. It's emotionally, physically hard, dangerous. We must deal with pain, some of which we might have helped to cause. You cannot talk of healing racism until you face the pain, says Adam Dyer. And we are so often too quick to jump to the healing part, the happy part. But this is hard. Like parenting. Like being a mother. It's gorgeous in its beauty. But don't let anyone fool you into thinking it is easy or that it is pleasant all the time. Let's get real, shall we? Your kids will tell you that they hate you, and you will be exhausted, and you will wonder if it matters. But you will keep at it, because it is about fierce love put into everyday practice. It's not enough to espouse the values of justice. You must practice them. It's not enough to say you love your kids. You must actually care for them, and then let them be free when it's time. It's not enough to say, we're against racism. We must dismantle the systems of power and privilege that elevate some and demean others. It's not enough to say, we're for peace. We must embody peace in our actual daily living. It's about putting fierce love into everyday practice. And we will not always win. Indeed, there will be tragic losses. But we keep at it. Our minds, our hearts stayed on freedom. Because each child that's born is a holy child, each and every, no exceptions. Come on up, come on up. This train is bound for freedom. Somehow my heart was growing weaker, says that song. Somehow my heart was growing weaker, firmly did that lady stand, lift me up, took my hand. Come on up, I got a lifeline. This is the lifeline, the ancestors' breaths, the grandmother's prayers. Hush, and listen to the voice of love calling your name. The mother of justice, the parent of mercy, the teacher of hope loves you fiercely. The work is not easy, but we shall rise to this moment. I believe we will. I know we can. I feel we must, together, together, with our hearts stayed on freedom. Come on up, and let's sing together. 143 in your gray hymnal. The words will be up on the screen, but I suggest getting out the hymnal so you can follow along. 153. Our chalice, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry with us until we are together again. We'll start the teaching in this room at 11:30 in 24 minutes. So come on back if you can, and we'll do that, and we'll be out by noon. I'll extinguish our chalice while you join hands together. The poet Adrian Rich wrote, "My heart is moved by all I cannot save. So much has been destroyed. I have to cast my lot with those who, age after age, perversely, with no extraordinary power, reconstitute the world." We'll sing together, "Go Your Way in Peace." We'll sing it through twice.